If you are transitioning your business entirely or even in part away from retail and more towards digital marketing, you're going to love this interview. We talk with the founder of a company that made this transition successfully 10 years ago. They're still in retail, still very successful, but the e-commerce and digital marketing side of their business has grown exponentially. And now, as we all go through COVID, they are poised for great growth, for great success, and a continued future that you're going to learn a lot of things in this interview that will help you make that transition for your business as well.
Welcome to another episode of the Harvest Growth Podcast, focused on helping consumer product companies, inventors, and entrepreneurs harvest the growth potential of their product businesses by teaching cutting-edge marketing strategies and interviewing successful marketers, as well as product marketing experts that share their stories to inspire you to achieve hypergrowth for your own business. I'm your host, John LeClaire, founder and CEO of Harvest Growth, and I believe that if you want to make your product the next household name, you just need to follow the right plan, and that even the best products struggle to succeed when they step away from proven strategies that work. If you'd like to learn more about what we call the perfect launch process for marketing products, check out harvestgrowth.com. And if you still have questions on how you can implement this process for your business, you'll see a link on our homepage to set up a free consultation with one of our product launch specialists.
I'm excited to have on the show with me today, Charles Spitaletta, who's the CEO of Lola Products. They're a family business that's been around since 1969 and very successful in household cleaning tools, which, as many of you, my listeners know, I have a special heart for cleaning products. We've been doing lots of cleaning products and marketing lots of cleaning products over the years. So I'm really excited for this interview. Charles, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So I just did a quick intro into Lola Products, but you'll be able to tell the story better than I can. Can you tell us more about how Lola started and then your history? I think you've been with Lola specifically for about 20 years, right?
Sure. Yeah. Lola Products was started as a brush company, a U.S. arm of a German brush company that made brushes in Germany and were imported into the United States. Partnership between an American and a German, and the German company, 1969.
And then, you joined the company about 20 years ago. Can you tell us about your life with the company, with Lola Products?
Sure. Family had an association with the company. My father had was brought on in the first year as a master sales broker for the entire country, and in 2000, my family had purchased the company, and that's when I started working for the for Lola Products about 20 years ago.
So I noticed in your LinkedIn profile, right before the year 2000, you were a chef at Legal Seafood, which I mentioned to you before we started this interview. It's one of my favorite restaurants. I lived in Boston for several years, and if you live in that area, everyone loves Legal Seafood.
Sure.
Talk about that transition. How did you go from being the chef at Legal Seafood to the next year becoming the CEO of a very successful business like this?
Well, I didn't start out as the CEO. Actually, I started out in manufacturing for the company, and being a chef, you're manufacturing food, it was a transition from, you know, food to consumer products, you know, hard consumer goods. So it was a little transition when it came to the materials, but you know, the basics of processes are pretty similar, actually. You know, setting up production lines and inventory reordering and process and flows and production lines, and it's all kind of similar. So it was not too hard of a transition.
And then you stayed with for several years, raised through the ranks, I guess, and understand the business, and now ultimately running the business.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I had to learn a little bit about that business. So there was a transition when it comes to, like, you know, the products and how you actually run a warehouse. You know, a lot of, food is perishable. Sponges aren't as perishable. So there's a lot of little nuances that you need to know when it comes to consumer goods as opposed to food. So It's just a, you know, a little bit of a learning curve there. So, yeah. And, so yeah, I did start out, you know, in manufacturing, production, warehousing, logistics, and things like that. And, you know, it allowed me to learn a lot of the operational aspects of the business before I started actually, you know, running it at a higher level.
So, and I read through the history of your company a little bit. You made a transition back around 2010, so about 10 years ago. And it's a transition I'd love to spend a little bit of time talking about, because I think a lot of companies are trying to make that transition now. And that's the transition from retail to e-commerce, or at least including e-commerce. I know you still have a big retail presence as well, but that's when you made that conscious decision. Now, 10 years ahead of the curve, right? For a lot of competitors out there or other product marketers across many categories that may have had an intense retail focus before COVID are now trying to figure out, okay, now I've got to obviously make this leap towards e-commerce. And luckily you've been doing that for a long time, as you know, retail is suffering a little bit right now because of COVID. Hopefully it'll come back in general, right? As an industry. But how did you make that transition? Any learnings from that time period of when you first started? It's a big difference, right? Making the jump from retail over to e-commerce. What were some of the learnings that really helped you guys succeed?
Well, at first, you know, websites were more marketing tools. We did, early on, we did start selling our products, you know, on web portals, on our own website. But they were also very, very cool marketing tools that you could, very easily change and update without having to worry about printing catalogs and doing mailings and doing stuff like that. So it was a great promotional tool. And, you know, we also had, since Lowell's a very old company, we have a lot of people that are consumers. You know, over the years, you're in and out of certain retailers, and, you know, we had a big a base of people who would call up and say, you know, I can't find this brush anymore. I can't find this sponge anymore. I can't find this scour anymore. You know, we'd always fulfill their orders, even though they were small. And it was a great opportunity for us years ago to say, hey, listen, you know, let's put this a website together so at least they can. And this is before 2010. This is even like 15 years ago that we were doing this. So it started out as something, you know, smaller and less of a focus on our business when it came to sales but it was a good marketing tool, and it was a good way to reach customers that couldn't find our products, that knew them over the years. And it just, you know, kind of grew from there as a base.
So if you kind of put yourself in the shoes of some other marketers that are doing this transition now for the first time, let's say, you know, you've obviously still have a very successful retail business, but if you're forced now to start e-commerce, from the learnings you've had over the last 10 or 15 years, do you have any advice to make that transition easier?
Yeah, sure. One of the things is you have to, if you're primarily focused on retail and that's what you know and that's what you've learned, digital is a complete different animal when it comes to, you know, how you market to people. I mean, you're dealing with, you know, a lot of small orders, smaller orders, and you're dealing with a lot more sales. So you, instead of selling, 20 large orders, you're selling 2,000 small orders, you know? And it's not easy to process those orders. Like if you're going to try and process those orders, like you process your large orders, you're gonna lose your shirt because it's order processing and things like that can be very expensive. So it's important that if you're starting from scratch, that you create the infrastructure and as early as possible to handle the volume of orders that you're pushing through your system. Very important. Because if you try and process them the same way you processed your bulk orders to larger retail and distribution clients, you're going to have a very hard time. Yeah.
Yeah. And as an interim step, you know, as these, some of these companies make the transition, there are good vendors out there from a 3PL or fulfillment standpoint that can be a little more expensive, obviously, than running it on your own. But especially when you've got spiky volume in the beginning, you're just figuring this out. You know, look, I would give advice to anybody listening, look to some vendors that have been doing this a long time. They can accelerate the learning curve, right? So it may cost a little bit more than might treat you the long term, but.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, we have too. Having the talent that has the experience in logistics and automation and software tools that is going to help you market your products online, target marketing. And when it comes to finding the people, you know, like the old adage is, the old way is you put a billboard up there and you're hoping you're going to get your, you know, somebody that wants your product to see it, right? Or you put an ad in a paper and you're hoping you're going to get somebody who wants your product to see it. Well, the new way is that the intelligence is all there. You can find the people that actually want your product through target marketing. So, you know, it's a completely different type thing when you're marketing online. So, you know, the big learning curve.
I love that comparison. I think of, you know, it's no longer the beauty of digital advertising is it's no longer sitting, creating something, you know, a messaging or whatever, and waiting for people to find you, but you can actually go find them, you know, in a very specific targeted fashion. Yeah. So I'd love to chat about your products too. So one of the reasons I think you guys have been so successful over the years is product ingenuity. I mean, if you go to the website, it's lolaproducts.com, and I'll put that in the show notes for any listeners as well. In case you're driving, go check it out later. You can see the line of products that have been so successful for you and your company. What's been the biggest success you guys have had in your history with Lola?
We've had several successes. One of the first products we launched was the sticky mop that was kind of new and innovative. It was basically a giant lint roller for the floor. And you know, it's interesting how ideas come about. You know, they come about just through happenstance or you know something that you see, something you see somebody doing, and. We had to come up with the idea for like a giant lint roller for the floor because my mother used to go on her hands and knees with a small lint roller. And she used to like, you know, on the carpet and she would roll the carpet and we'd be like, what are you doing? You know, mom, what are you doing? She's like, this picks up everything, you know, and we're just like, oh my God. And like, why not, you know, make that into a larger item so people can stand up and actually roll. So, that was launched in 2002. That was one of our first, innovative items. And, we have a great following on that one. So, so it's interesting where, product ideas come from.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And have you over the years had any, and I assume the answer is yes, because no one hits 1,000, right? In terms of launching products. Have you been surprised by any products that you were excited about that just didn't hit it out of the park like you thought they would?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we've had definitely some product failures when it comes. Most of our product failures have come when we've tried to do something that already had like a very, very firmly established market leader that was doing it good. And so we learned early on if we were going to like, you know, try and do something, do something different. And the only way that we could actually like knock off a leader was if we had really some kind of cost advantage, which doesn't really happen very often because, you know, they've been doing it for so long, you know. So we've had product failures when we've tried to say, hey, listen, they're doing that. They're doing it well. We think we could do it better. And, you know, there's a lot of good competitors out there and there's a lot of ideas, especially in cleaning space. There's always, people are always looking to save time and do something more conveniently in the cleaning space. So we've learned to say, hey, listen, you know, let's create our own instead of, you know, trying to duplicate what somebody else has done.
That's why I love talking with successful cleaning product marketers. I mean, it's a space that I've played in for a long time. I really enjoy it. And back to my history with OxiClean from many years ago, but it's also, it's such a competitive space that in order to be successful, you got to know what you're doing and you got to do it right, right? You've got to be good at it. And I think, you know, and everyone has their own position that they follow, but the most common similarity between the successes I've seen is, as you said, it's being unique and different. It's hard in any category, but especially in cleaning products or any crowded category. I mean, beauty products would be like that too. You've got to do something to truly stand out from the crowd and really differentiate yourself. And that makes the road a lot easier. It reminds me of, you know, my time with OxiClean, you know, back in the day. This is back in the Billy Mays days, right? When it truly was unique and different as a form, at the way that it worked, the demonstrations that we showed. And the funny thing was, so we achieved pretty fast success, you know, a rapid rise of growth. And then Clorox, the entrenched 100-year-old brand Clorox, came and competed against us. And long story short, we were able to fend them off for the exact reason you just talked about, right? It doesn't matter necessarily the size of the company sometimes. It's just about getting entrenched in consumers' minds. So as soon as you can, when you come out with that unique product, if you can own that, you know, with OxiClean, we fought off Clorox and their competitive product doesn't exist anymore. It was called OxyMagic many years ago, right?
Yeah.
And there's, you know, there aren't any competitors that are really close into OxiClean, directly competitors because of that, right? And I think it's same thing with yours. As I look down at your products, they're very unique and different, and you know, you can own that space. It makes it easier to survive and to fend off that competition, even if it's from the big guys.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's a good example that you're bringing out with the OxiClean. Yeah, you guys, OxiClean was entrenched, and even a company with Clorox couldn't, you know, they say, oh, we could do it better. And, well, you know what? There's already somebody doing it really good. So, you know, if there are people out there doing something really good, move on to the next thing. Why try and, you know, pound your head against the wall when, you know, there's plenty of soft spots out there that you could, you know, that will make it a lot easier.
Exactly.
Maybe a little bit of risk, but, you know, the reward is much better.
Now, one of your newer products is Wowables. How long has that been out?
Last year, 2019, we formally launched it. We did have it on QVC for a short while, but it was launched last year.
So for those that aren't on the website, like, you know, I'm looking at it right now, but many aren't. Can you describe what that product is, what Wowables is?
Sure. It is a basically a reusable paper towel. Okay. It's made out of similar materials that our paper towel are made out of. But it's reinforced with cotton fibers to make it a little stronger. And it's a little thicker. And so it can be washed in a dishwasher or a washing machine. It can be reused over and over again, as opposed to, like, you know, regular paper towels, which are disposable.
It's another great example. I mean, you think of when we talk ingenuity, you know, it looks the same as a paper towel roll. I mean, in terms of, like, the structure, right? If you just look at the packaging, but it's a completely different product. And I think a lot of times true uniqueness can come in that way where it's, you know, one relatively minor change. Obviously the chemistry of the product, right, is different, but it can become completely unique in the usage, right? So now because it's reusable, unlike everything else, it really can stand out and be totally unique in a category that is, I would say, very crowded, right? So you stood apart from the category, right? You separate yourself from that.
Yeah, we would never come out with a paper towel. I mean, that's that's a large manufacturing investment, and there's people that have been that are doing it, incredibly well and inexpensively. And you have to have a lot of volume in that category to make money, like a ton of volume. In inventing this product, we thought, you know, we said, okay, you know, what is out there? What kind of need needs to be fulfilled in this type of product that isn't currently? And there were some other towels that were reusable out there, but most of them were in the bamboo space. And this one is much more environmentally friendly. you people say bamboo and they think, you know, automatically environmentally friendly, and it's really not. We came out with a product that really was true to its word in how environmentally friendly it was, how durable it was, performance-wise, it's really capturing a trend in the market of waste, which paper towels is a huge waste, filling up landfills and stuff like that, and that's becoming more and more prevalent too, as more and more consumers realize the effects that their waste has on the environment. That's definitely a trend in consumer products as well, that people are becoming more and more aware of and cognizant of.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so this, you launched this product in 2019, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. So last year, obviously very different from a product like the Sticky Mop you launched in 2002 that starts retail, eventually goes to e-commerce. So how did you go about launch? Like, what was the first thing you did to really get the word out for a new product launch, just a year ago?
We came out. So the soft launch was about a year ago, but the hard launch was a little bit thereafter. And it's all about when you're launching digitally, it's all about content and placement and visibility. We came out with a video explaining all, a fun video. It's on wowables.tv. You'll see it. And explaining a lot of the important the usages of the towel and, how it's different and how it can make people's lives better. And performance-wise, how well of a performer it is too as well. So, video, we're talking about websites. Amazon is a big, is a big a launch site for the product as well. As a matter of fact, it got an award on Amazon as the best reusable paper towel on the market. So, it's interesting that you say so. Like, usually you start out in retail, and now we're launching things digitally because we get much greater feedback faster what's good about the product, what we might need to improve upon about the product. We'll get the feedback very fast, and it helps us make really quick changes also to the product, because we hear from the consumer right away about what they like and what they don't like. So
is it kind of a reversal of the original marketing model of retail and then moved for transition to digital? Now it's start on digital, learn, build up demand awareness, and then go to retail later on?
Absolutely. It's something that, we've been transitioning to for quite some time. Yeah. And that's our model now. Our model now is to launch digitally. Absolutely. So,
yeah, it's a great model. We've seen a lot of success with that as well. I mean, not just during COVID time, but really, as you said, it's about the learnings. You can learn so fast and be able to grow your business so quickly, mm-hmm. so that when you do get to retail, you're not asking, it's no longer, you're not questioning things, right? Am I pricing this right? Do I have the right wording on the package? You get all that figured out and then really take advantage of it when the time comes to go to retail. Love that.
And it's great too, because, the old traditional model of, putting it on the retail shelf and, you don't hear from those people. And you don't hear about every problem. The digital consumer is very engaged, which is great. So, we have like a built-in product testers almost, if you want to call them that. And they're the real deal. I mean, they're much better than anybody you could hire, because they actually, spent their hard-earned money on it. So, what we've gotten back from digital is just tremendous. The amount of great data that we get back from people is helped us tremendously, for our products.
Yeah, and I love, it's something that, you know, you guys are an established company, obviously, with experience and a track record and, you know, some funding to be able to do this, right? But this is a process that can work even for brand new startups. They can learn from this. Unlike, you know, my original background on the marketing side was with Kraft Foods, Nabisco, and you know, we'd spend $2 million on a launch. And half of that was market research, right? To get these learnings, and you're still kind of guessing at it. And still the company had a 90% failure rate, right? Where now you can get way better learnings by just launching, right? Do it digitally. As you said, if you think about it as testing and research, and there's going to be some cost behind it, of course, right? But you can actually make some money during that phase when you're learning. And it's better. I would say it's significantly better than these massive tests we used to do back in the day of these traditional CPG type companies.
Yeah. And we've done both those type tests where, you know, we've done, product testing offline and you know, you learn a lot more things. Believe it, you know, you learn a lot more things from the actual consumers. So, you know, we like to get the products out there. You know, instead of taking, you know, 2 years to develop a product and making sure we get everything actually like perfect down to the T, you know, we'll sometimes throw a product, you know, out there and see what, in a small way, and see what the reaction is online. And make product improvements quickly. That's based upon the feedback that we get.
So I just want to confirm I heard you right, because we used to do that similar approach. So you'll launch something, well, let's say it might be 80% done, right? And then realize, okay, it's not perfect, but we want to perfect it with the help of consumers before you really grow it or scale it. Is that right? Correct?
Well, yeah, we do that sometimes. Depends. I mean, you know, if that 80% really is just more, you know, aesthetics and function, then function. If there's something really functional, it still isn't finished. Obviously, we can't do that. But, you know, when it comes to, you know, like features of the product, I would say, you know, where, you know, when we launch new products, we always want to have some cool features. But, you know, sometimes we'll say, well, you know what, let's hold off on these features and let's see what we get back from the consumers before we actually, you know, do some real... do some additional things that we want to do to the product. Sure.
Yeah, no, I love that. It reminds me back in the day, again, back in my OxyClean days, we used to do that at trade shows or consumer home and garden shows. And it's still a good way of doing it, right? Because you're talking to people, you're selling to them, but really in digital, it's so much faster. And you're talking to so many more people, right? At the end of the day, through the digital platforms. Yeah. So again, one of the reasons you guys have been so successful is because of this, you know, constant stream of really cool new products that you've launched and some that you have in the pipeline now. Is there a process that you follow in order to find these opportunities and, you know, think of the original concept before you start, you know, developing, perfecting? How do you come up with these ideas?
We come up with a lot of product ideas by, you know, just seeing what's out there. We do have meetings and try and dream up of product voids that are out there. You know, we'll walk, we haven't, not doing it lately, but, you know, we'll walk trade shows to kind of stimulate and see, you know, what other people are doing, of course, as well. That's new. You know, so yeah, I mean, the ideas, sometimes they just come off the brain, you know, in the middle of the night. You're just like, oh, wow, I got a great idea. But, you know, I like observing people. I mean, constantly, it's interesting because when I was a chef on a restaurateur, you know, I used to go into a restaurant and I would, you know, I would look at everything and, you know, I would, you know, knock, you know, tap on the, look underneath the seat and I would check out the table. And then I, you know, you're always trying to find ideas. And, you know, now I'm in this business, I'm walking through a supermarket, you know, I go right to the cleaning section and I start looking at things and, you know, and start analyzing things. And you never know when that idea is going to come. It's from observing what's, you know, how people are cleaning currently, what people are doing out there, in the space and your own experiences. I like to clean myself. So, you know, I'll clean and sometimes I come up with ideas just based upon, you know, I'm saying, well, this is hard to clean. It's got to be a better way of doing it. So, you know, we'll come up with ideas that way too. So
there's a lot of it's, a, I love that. It's a great way to describe kind of the innovation process, because so many business owners get stuck in a rut, right? You develop a product, and especially if it's working well, right? You just kind of let it go and you've focused on other things. But it's having that eye towards innovation and just never knowing when the innovation is going to come, but being ready for it, right? Just observing, as you said. It's a great way to put it, I think, to see opportunity.
Absolutely. Yeah, sure. I mean, you always got to have the senses out there trying to see what's going on in your space. So, you know, I see people cleaning, and I'm always curious, you know, but what are they doing? How are they doing it? You know, I'll even ask them questions. Oh, wow. You like, you know, do you, so yeah, you like that product, you know, anything that you don't like about it, you know, anything you wish you had, you know, it's innovation is an investment in thoughts and time and trying to, you know, get to the bottom of things. It's not easy. They come up with a good idea. You have to constantly work at it. It's a constant work in progress.
Yeah. Absolutely. It sure can be a lot of fun though. When those innovations or those ideas that come in the middle of the night eventually are seen in a tangible product that people are buying, you know, putting out their hard earned money for, it's very rewarding and a lot of fun. Well, Charles, this has been a lot of fun. It's been a really great interview. I feel like we could talk for hours and learn from you, but is there anything I didn't ask that you think would be helpful for our audience to hear?
Well, we covered a lot, you know, from a digital space, you know, we were talking about, you know, transitioning. I think, you know, we did talk about it a little bit. I think one of the biggest hurdles that we had in transitioning from, you know, a traditional company that marketed to large consumers and then transitioning to a company that specialized in digital is that it's a cultural transformation from the top down, from the bottom all the way up to the top in how your organization's thinking. So if you're, you know, if you're thinking about moving into the digital space, it's a complete transformation in how everybody thinks in the company. So it's it and your processes and everything from the bottom up, and you'll make a lot of mistakes in the beginning, especially. But it's okay. That's the thing. You know, some of your older traditional models of businesses, especially, you know, my parents is you know, you can't make mistakes. Well, that's not the case today. You have to make mistakes because you have to because the. And it's interesting because, you know, I heard a quote from Jeff Bezos. He said that he doesn't wait until he's 100% or 90% sure of something is going to work. He goes, he hits around that 70% mark and he goes. Inherent in that is failure, you know, because you're only 70% of the way there. And you can't be worried about failure. But you have to take failure and you got to act quickly on the failure. That's the thing. So it's a completely different way of thinking. So if you're going to get into that digital space, I would say, you know, do the research and how digital companies operate, how they think, how they act, how they work and everything like that. So you're prepared, you know?
Yeah, it's a mindset. You know, just like you're talking about innovation, it's being open to learning opportunities. And that might be looking for, you know, innovation opportunities, or it might be learning from failure. But right, just realizing you're progressing forward and whatever happens, good or bad, you can always learn from it and make it better the next day, right? In terms of the way you're operating your business or the next product you might be launching. So I think that's great advice in the situation that a lot of people are finding themselves in right now, where they've got to change their business mindset, structure, et cetera. But also I think you've shared some great benefits of that, right? So this transition from retail to e-commerce, especially, there's a lot of learnings you can get that you otherwise couldn't get. And we can all come out of this much stronger than we were previously.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Charles, thanks again for your time. I really appreciate it. I know how busy you are running this company and always developing new ideas, right? Like you're always out there working on the next thing. So I really appreciate you taking the time to share some of your expertise and your stories with our audience today.
Sure. Thanks for having me. A lot of fun.
Thank you for your valuable insights and for taking the time to share your story. Our audience of inventors, entrepreneurs, and product marketers will benefit greatly from what you've taught us today. For the listeners, go to their website to learn more. Also, be sure to check out harvestgrowthpodcast.com to see other episodes that we have recorded. And if you like this episode and you want to learn more about how you can profitably grow your consumer product business, please subscribe to our show and leave us a review on iTunes or Google Play.